Om Shanti. So our subject today is slightly different from what was mentioned in the morning class, at least what was asked of me and what was mentioned in the class was not the same. Same idea. Anyway, it's really the subject of sin, dangerous word, and how do you know that your sins are getting removed? Because a very important part of this practice of Raj Yoga is the removal of people's sins. And so we have to take a look at, first of all, what is a sin? Because we have to have some definitions here. And what does it mean to get a sin and to get a sin removed? Is it anything to do with pardoning, forgiveness, washing, purging, purification, and such things? Yes? Then I suppose many people who come here from what we call double foreign come from a Judeo-Christian background. And when you come from a Judeo-Christian background, this whole thing of sin is quite a big thing. It's also connected with guilt, being bad. And then there's an even worse thing, which is called original sin, which is whether you've done any sins or not doesn't matter. You're a sinner right there, you know, just because you exist. So it's all very heavy, you see. So of course one of the nice things about Baba is he makes us light. That's very good. But sometimes we remain heavy anyway. So you have to look at that weight or burden of sin. You know, even in the Murali, Baba says the burden of sin is weighing heavily on your head and you have to remove it, you see. So, of course, if you look at anybody's head, you will not see any bundles of sins on their heads, but you will know through your third eye that their mind, intellect, and sanskaras are oppressed by the presence of sin, you see. So what is this thing called sin to start with? We have to look at that. And also, we have to take into consideration the idea that sin is a word that's heavily laden with emotions and threats and promises of having all your fingernails pulled out and being nicely cooked in boiling oil and all of these wonderful things that are depicted in the art of people like Hieronymus Bosch and so on. And which actually take place in the torture prisons that exist as we speak. You see, all these behaviors are actually going on right now while we are sitting here, not being tortured. Some many people are being tortured. And so that is also quite unpleasant. And then some people are getting tortured and some people are torturing other people. You see, so maybe later on they will switch roles, we don't know. But according to the philosophy of karma, there may be something like that. The ways in which people treat each other, which are abusive and unkind and unpleasant and so on. This is a tradition that is there in this world and is in all the different cultures all over the world. Child abuse, women abuse, animal abuse, abuse of the land you know, so different forms of violence. So sin is a little bit connected with violence, but all the vices in a general way. So, you know, most of us are not, you know, raping and pillaging and being awful to each other, isn't that right? We're quite nice, yes? Mostly. And we all have people in our immediate relationship for whom we experience, or with whom or about whom we experience, varying forms of distress. Yes? It could be your other person who's in the center with you. It could be your parents. It could be your center in charge. It could be your students. It could be anything. You know, there's all kinds of possibilities, because we know that this time in the kalpa, there are a lot of karmic accounts. And these karmic accounts present themselves in distressing ways through people, through the body, through the mind, and circumstances and financial, and so many things are there, you see. All of which we experience as some kind of punishment, and which we wish to escape from, yes? Nobody says, oh, I would love to be with somebody who's bothering me all the time. You know, what we generally say that we like and what we actually like is purity, peace, happiness, bliss, and having a good sense of your personal power. This is what we like, and this is what we believe in, and this is also what we know is the original stage of the soul. These five elements of the soul are purity, peace, love, power, and bliss. And we always want to experience these things all the time, and especially when we're having meditation. And then when we don't experience, then we think that there's something wrong, or somebody did something, or it's somebody's fault, or maybe I'm not okay, you know. It's either they're not okay, or I'm not okay, or it's not okay, isn't it? We don't like when heaven is not there, which it's not. Many people, excuse me, when they come to Madhuban, Gyansarovar, Shantivan, they say, oh, it's heaven here. All the people are nice, you know, sweet, smiling, loving. It's nice and clean and tidy and all that. So you experience heaven here, but you also experience some settlement of karma here, yes? You get some illness, or your mind makes you crazy, or something is there. Because Madhuban is also a very good place for tapasya, and part of tapasya is the settlement of karma. So I suppose the most fundamental question of all is, am I bad or am I good? Isn't it? Because if I think I am good, why is this bad stuff happening? And if I think I'm bad, then right there, that's already unpleasant. You see. So we have to deal with discrepancies. Yes, why not? This is the allergy season. So there we are. You see, we all have something. And we all have someone. Even Baba has said that there's going to be a vice. We all have a particular vice, which absolutely sticky, won't go away, can't get rid of it, not no way, not no how. Is it? Have you got one? Yeah. Two or three, at least one. It's like Baba says, every soul has at least one speciality and virtue. So in the same way, we all have at least one horrible, sticky, and unremovable, indelible vice. which we have to remove, because of course we can't go to heaven and bring any vices with us, because then that would contaminate heaven. So of course there's not very many people there, but there's quite a lot, so we have to have at least 900,000 uncontaminated people. And the stock of people who can go to heaven is sitting right here in this room, you see. So we all have to be that. Completely viceless. You know, you've heard of this description of deities. 16 celestial degrees complete, completely non-violent, completely full with all the virtues, completely viceless, following all the maryadas, completely non-violent, like that. Yes? So that's you, right? Yes? But then you have this thing called sin. And the two things don't fit together. Now sometimes people have a very good idea and they think that they can cut their soul in half and keep the good half, throw away the bad half. Have you tried that? Can't be done. Because the soul is indivisible. And not only that, but every soul has a golden, silver, copper and iron and diamond bit, isn't it? Yes? You can't say, okay, I'm going to come to the Golden Age and Silver Age and next Kalpa and for all subsequent Kalpas I will not come to be Copper Age and Iron Age. Then I will remain pure. Can't be done. So one of the things that Gyan tells us is we have to come to terms with the fact that we will become the opposite of our original pure selves. That means that every single absolutely perfect divine deity will sooner or later get 5 vices, 10 vices, and few others. I see. And there's no escape. You can't get away from it. So in religions, everybody comes from some or another religious background or at least religious context. The way that traditionally religions, patriarchal cultures tend to deal with this subject of sin is to think that if you can make people feel bad enough about it, they'll somehow get better. You see, but there's absolutely no evidence that this is so. But people continue to do this. And the evidence is that the more you make people feel bad about their sins, the more sins they do. And the more they become oppressed by the presence of sin within themselves. And so it doesn't matter, you know, how many practices you do. Like, for example, Baba sometimes says in the Murali, you do pilgrimages, charity, tapasya, mantras, chanting, prayers, all that. You only get more sinful. It doesn't work. You have to do it. And it doesn't work. But you have to do it. Why do we have to do it? Huh? Well, if we didn't do it, might be it'd be worse. But definitely if we didn't do it, we wouldn't be doing what it takes to actually reach Baba. So we have to do bhakti, because you can't get God until you've completed your bhakti. So if you don't do any, then you can't get God. So that doesn't work either. So even though none of these things work, we have to do them anyway. So it's not very logical, but it's necessary. So then we also have to come to terms with the fact that there are many, many things we have to do which are illogical and unreasonable, but necessary. And sometimes we find that irritating, but we also have to come to terms with that. Because getting irritated about having to do something unnecessary and illogical also indicates the presence of anger, right? Which we're supposed to give it up. We have about 4 or 5 days to go, you know. No more anger, that means no more irritation, getting fed up, disliking, getting bothered by all this stuff, you see. Because all of those emotions are actually signs that there is sin in the soul, you see. So sin is when you're not fully and completely peaceful, pure, loving, blissful and powerful. But mostly the thing that is missing is the power, isn't it? Because if you have spiritual power within you, then it's very easy to remain peaceful, pure, loving and blissful. Yes? But if your yoga power is down, then everything is down. All those things are down and all your vices come up. So the simplest thing that we have to do, which has been told to us ever since we first came in Gyan and continues to be told in every single murali, is be soul conscious and remember Shiv Baba and draw power. Make your yoga go up. And so this is also why it is said that yoga is the very good way to finish off your sins. The thing is, if our yoga is lukewarm, then they'll come back. Or they'll keep coming back. So Baba has told us we have to have hot, volcanic yoga. So we've had a few classes from a few different people on this subject of the volcanic yoga. And so everyone must have been practicing it and experiencing that when you do have that kind of yoga and when you can keep it up, then whatever your weaknesses are and your inner negative feelings and so on and so forth, they don't happen. But then when your heat of your volcano goes down a bit, then they come back. And Baba has said very clearly that, well, it's only purely and simply because you're not hot enough. It has to be so hot that those impurities are fully and completely and finished for good and all, forever and ever, until this time yesterday, next kalpa. Yes? So they will come back every kalpa. So we want to get rid of them for the rest of the confluence age. And so the most important aspect of the removal of sin is the practice of keeping the level of yoga up so that it doesn't go down. So one thing is getting it up there, second is keeping it up there, and third is keeping it rising. So that means we have to have a rhythm of yoga which is maintained. And the one thing that gets in the way of that is service. And so people have an ambivalent relationship with service because it messes up your yoga. But then Baba says service which messes up your yoga is anyway not service. So whatever that is which messes up your yoga, we can't actually call it service. We have to find a different name for it, so that we don't get mixed up about what is service and what's not service. Am I right? Because if something is service, it will have yoga included in it. And so then that service will not be an instrument for your yoga to go down. So one of the things Baba has said is this I, you know, the three I's. And so I have to do this or that service, that means that's not service, that's I consciousness. And then the yoga goes down with that one. So I consciousness, practically speaking, becomes instrumental for increasing, if not maintaining, your sin level. Because if there's I conscious, then I did it or I didn't do it, or you didn't let me do it, or you got in the way, or I couldn't do it because. So all of these are actually expressions that come along with emotions of displeasure or distress. You see. And so they all go in the category of sin, right? It's anger. So, what to do? Obviously, you have to again and again and again go back to square one, which is be soul conscious, remember Baba, and get that process going again. So then Baba has said, you know, you establish your yoga, you break your yoga, you establish it, you break it, it's not strong. So we have to give very high priority to setting up a rhythm and a way of having yoga which is maintainable. So here, while you've been in Madhuban, Shantivan, if you're at the center, you have these fixed times, you know. In a way we might say the memorial of that is the fixed times of prayer that you find in Christianity, in Islam, in Judaism, in the Hindu temples. They have fixed time for doing their arati and so on. So you have your 4 o'clock morning, you have your before the murli, during the murli, after the murli, hourly minute meditations, 2 to 3 hourly 3 minute meditations, evening meditation, have a look at your chart meditation, go to sleep meditation, wake up in the morning again meditation. All of these fixed times are there. And if we can do all of these fixed times in a proper way, that is sufficient for maintenance. And of course there are many, many things that interfere with that. Somebody wants something, you go traveling, something happens, you have to go here, you have to go there, this thing is required, so on and so forth. And so then at that time, the important effort is to see, let me be the instrument, let that energy of Baba be there. Let me combine myself with Baba and let all of these activities get done in the consciousness of remembrance. You see, because eventually Baba has said we have to have remembrance 24 hours a day. See? So if we're having remembrance 24 hours a day, soul consciousness, yoga, an increase of our power level is happening all the time. You know, then we would be like Daddy Janki or Daddy Gulzar. You know, you see them. They're definitely in remembrance all the time. And they're going higher and higher, faster and faster, and you're getting further and further left behind. Isn't it? And so then we can't allow ourselves to be disheartened because of that, but we have to catch up. So Baba has told us all the things that are necessary for catching up. And the main focus of attention is this I, you know, either I am everything or I am nothing. Both of those I's are the two sides of the bad penny of arrogance. You see. And then there's another interesting point which Baba had mentioned some days ago in the murli, that sin is sealed into the soul through the heat of the vice, especially the vice of lust. You know? So we have to really think about our celibacy, you see? Because people find BK celibacy quite objectionable because they don't understand the necessity and the value, the importance of celibacy. So in the scriptural references to original sin, so original sin is exactly that, you know, is that kind of impurity. And so we know from the knowledge of the cycle that in the Golden Age and the Silver Age, there was purity. Human reproduction did not take place in the current manner. It happened through the power of yoga. And so what we have to do in practicing celibacy is undo the effect of sexuality and involvement with matter and taking pleasure from the matter, the skin, over a period of 2,500 years, either through male bodies or through female bodies, you see. And so we have become completely sealed into being under the influence of matter. So we have to undo that. You see? So that's quite a lot of activities. So even if we've done a lot of spiritual practices, which may even involve lives in which we have been celibate, you see, because in the path of bhakti, suppose if you're a monk or a nun or you do some vows like this, this abstinence is part of it, you see. And so in gyan, we're having abstinence physically, mentally, emotionally, in dreams, in innuendos, in all the things that go with that, you see. And majority of people are not honest about their purity. So then we have to see, well, how can I intensify my honesty about my purity? And not only I have to be pure in regard to myself and my relations with others, but I have to be so powerful that nobody can dare to have an impure feeling about me. Because if they do, then this is going to contaminate me. Even if it's not my fault, it's still going to damage the soul. You see? And so we need to be what Baba has called the fire face for that. And Baba had even given a point in a murli. I don't know how clearly it came across in the English murli, but in the Hindi murli it was very clear that anybody comes to you with lascivious intentions, you spit fire at them and terrify them so that they cannot even get the thought or come anywhere near, you see, because as you get towards the end times, everything becomes extreme. And so the extent to which BKs are very extreme in our purity and our celibacy and our the transparency, so that we can be totally with God. To that extent, the other people are the other way. You see? Completely and totally motivated only by lust and anger and greed and all of this stuff. And so we have to not allow it to contaminate us or touch us. This is also part of being free from sin. We have to be free from even being an observer of somebody performing sin on some other person, you see, or even hearing about it or knowing about it. You know, virtually every single advertisement, newspaper, magazine, any kind of commercial display is full with these kinds of lust-producing provocations, you see, and you have to be unable to see them, though they're sitting in front of your eyes all day long, you see. Now, we have the example of Mama, who never saw any of that. You have some stories, people asking, oh, Mama, did you see that? Wasn't it awful? She said, no, I didn't see it. What was that? What are you talking about? I didn't see it. So we had to tune our eyes and our feelings in such a way that we don't even see it. You see? Because if you see it, then you start to have a battle with it. If you don't see it, then there's no battle. That's not an issue, you see. But you will only see it if you're attracted, and you will only be attracted if it's there, you see. And so, how to remove it? Firm determination. Going very, very deep into oneself and not allowing any excuses to happen, you see. And so, yes, it makes us very, very different from the rest of the world. And then Baba says, well, be in the middle of the rest of the world, though you are highly different from it. And you don't interact with it all that much, but you have to be there, you see, because there has to be this continuing practice to see but not see, hear but not hear, you know, these things. So that we are aware about Baba, and we are aware, like Baba said in the Murli that we just heard, are you aware of your deity form that's about to be happening, you know, because we're going to leave these bodies and go to the soul world, and we're going to get a deity body, and also we have our angelic body. So are we aware of those bodies? Because those two bodies, the angelic body and the deity body, are completely pure. And you have a pure mind to go with it, you see. So the impure mind is where there's still some sort of combustibility, some combustible elements within, you see. So the kind of purification that Baba is asking us to do is quite intense, quite deep. So we need to use all the different analogies that Baba has given us so that we can practice this in many, many varieties of ways. So for example, there's one wonderful Murli that comes every 5 years, the blotting paper Murli. It was not very long ago, you know. Baba is the blotting paper, and all the ink that is kind of rolling around on your soul, he'll blot it up and take it away. So that's a very nice picture, you know. Doesn't matter how much sin is there, he will blot it up and take it away. Huh? But then we have to be in yoga with Baba so that the blotting paper is blotting. Because if we're not in contact with the blotting paper, then it won't blot anything, will it? It won't absorb anything. So contact with Baba is a very important thing, and we have to find lots and lots of ways to be in contact with Baba as much as possible so that he can keep on blotting away our sins. And then the other analogy is the crucible, where, going back to what I was mentioning before, the sin gets sealed into the soul through the fire of lust. And it is on the fire of Gyan that the impurities can be actually removed. But both fires have to be, you know, fire of lust is very intense. So the fire of yoga, or as Baba uses the word lagan, the lagan, the fire of love for Baba has to be so great that all other considerations are secondary in comparison with that, and then we'll be able to become free. So take, for example, attachment. Now, a lot of people feel that attachment is not really a vice. Anybody like that? Attachment is a good vice. It's not a good vice. Attachment is a bad vice. Very bad vice. Why do people think it's a good vice? I think mostly people mix up attachment and love. Because, for example, in Hindi we have this word mamta. Mamta means attachment in a positive sense. But sometimes it's used to mean attachment in a negative sense. I see. And you see the word love. We know from our spiritual vocabulary that love is one of the five elements of the soul. It's absolutely the pure thing, you see. But then, you know, I love you. Like in Spanish, yo te quiero means I want you. I'm ready to consume you. This is love. You know, I will eat you up. I love you that much, like you're some kind of apple, and I'm going to eat you. And that's good. You should like that. Because I like that, you see. That's called desire, but it goes by the name of love. And a lot of people feel that it's very good to let somebody consume you, because then instead of being two people, you can be one person. You don't want to be the eaten up one, you know. And if you do eat up somebody, they'll be rolling around inside you trying to get out, you see. And so it's not good, really. It's not practical, comfortable situation for people to relate to each other as consumers and consumees, you know. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that body consciousness is another word for materialism. And materialism, in practical terms, means that you think the other people are objects, and that they're there for your convenience, and you may use them for your pleasure and any other needs you may have. And that's materialism. A lot of vices come from that, you see. So we have to understand that sin is a tradition. It's in the civilization that we are part of, you see. And most people subscribe to it and call it, you know, it's good. They say, this is good. And they describe sinful things in positive terms so that it confuses people. I see. So if I love you, that's good, you see, because I'm a loving soul and I love you. That means what exactly? You know? If I love somebody, why do I love that one and not the other one? You see? This is something I want. So that's not love, you see, because love is a verb and it involves giving. And otherwise the word love is normally used to refer to a way of getting somebody to put down their resistance so you can take from them. Confuse them by saying, this is love, you know. If we say, okay, straight out, this is, I'm here to exploit you, they'll say, no, 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 sorry, see you later. Because you use that kind of vocabulary. But if you say, no, I love you, you have to do this, and that'll be make you a very good person, you're very virtuous, you know, you help me, do what I want, you know, not make any complaints, tolerate my behavior, this is because I love you, and you have to love that, because people always want to be loved, right? And in that way you exploit somebody. But it goes by the name of love. So we have to be very particular about our vocabulary. And you see, this word attachment is very often described in those terms, that, oh, we have so much attachment for our family members. And what they mean by that is we love them. But it also means we're dependent on them. But we don't want to say that being dependent is bad, so we make it out to be good. Because if you're not dependent on family, why are there families, you know? And you create all this kind of logic so that you can convince yourself that different vices are actually virtues. And then in that way it's okay to carry on sinning, because it's not actually a sin. It's a virtue. So the good thing that Baba does is to, identify very clearly what is a sin and what is a virtue, you see. And so we have to also realize that while Baba is using terminology in a particular way, in a soul-conscious way, we have to see, am I receiving that information in a body-conscious way? Or am I also soul-conscious and understanding it in the spirit with which it is being spoken? Because otherwise I won't be able to learn anything. I'll just conveniently twist it around so that I'll say, you know, that actually Baba says that attachment is very good and we need to have it. You see, well, I haven't seen that in any Muralis. You know, he says, love is good, attachment is bad. Love means you do not love someone in particular. You love everybody. You see? And if you are a loving person, that means that you will treat people with respect, and you will look for their virtues and interact with them in that currency. You will not be angry with them, irritated with them, exploit them, or any of these other things, you see. But what you find is that you have tendencies, sanskaras. If you have a sanskara of feeling inadequate or inferior, then this will make you latch on to people who make you look better and try and use them to enhance your image. Huh? That's also a sin. It's a dependency. So that's an attachment. You see, we get attracted to somebody who seems to have what we don't have. So instead of getting it from Baba, we'll get it from that somebody. You see. And at the time when your yoga is down, you feel particularly weak, then all these somebodies with their various different virtues, you can't see their vices anymore at that moment. You see, oh, they have this and they have that, and if I just, you know, sidle up to this one, then some of it'll rub off on me and I will somehow get filled. And then you become attracted and then attached, and then you don't get what you want and then you get angry. I see. And all this is described quite clearly in the Gita about how there is great importance, great value given to the practice of detachment, because attachment or attraction is the thing that gets you caught up in those things. But the key is not that you are weak or that you are bad or any of those things. The key, I think, is that you don't pay attention on keeping the level of yoga up. If you keep the level of yoga up, then these things won't happen. And before jnana, they were happening. They became sanskaras. So then you have to identify what your sins are. The sins are actually the tendency to repeat a particular negative action rather than the negative action itself. Because the negative action, you can't change that. It happened. Okay, never mind. Doesn't matter. It happened. But the problem is happening again. And again and again and again. So this tendency to happen again is an energy or a compulsion that whenever you're in a similar situation, that sanskara wakes up and says, oh, I know how to do this. And your divine intellect has to say, yeah, this is true. However, we are not going to do this anymore. We're going to do this different thing. You see. So you have the sanskara that any time anybody insults you, you feel insulted. That's normal, right? And Baba has said, feeling insulted is a sin. And you say, but they insulted me, so of course I'm going to feel insulted. He says, nope. Why are you feeling insulted? Why are you taking it personally? Why are you doing that? Why are you looking into that person? Attached. No, somebody insults you, that's not your problem, that's their problem. If you make it your problem, that's your sin. If you resist the sanskara of feeling insulted, that's going to be very difficult. But you have to do it anyway. So when somebody insults you, it makes you feel angry, but you're not allowed to be angry, so then you feel hurt, but you're not allowed to be hurt, so then it makes you cry, but you're not allowed to cry, so you stuff it. And then it'll make you sick. You go to the doctor, ooh, I'm sick. He says, why did somebody insult you? He says, nothing to do with it. Everything to do with it. You see? And so Baba has said we have to have two things, tolerance and accommodation. Because when somebody insults you, it hurts. What does it hurt? It hurts your ego. It doesn't hurt anything else. It only hurts your ego. Your dignity. You know. Oh, how dare this person ignore me? How can they give me toli without drishti? You know, that's the worst, right? I came all this way not for the toli, for the drishti, and then I got the toli and no drishti. What is this? You know? You feel shortchanged. You feel, you know. And what it means is you want something. You say, oh, I love this person. You don't love this person, you want them to love you. Means you're coming from a place of insufficiency, as opposed to they are loving, you are loving, and you meet in a loving way. There's an equal amount and a slight amount of give and take. You know, when you're very empty, then you're going to need a whole ton of love, you know, but you don't want to pay for it. You want it free, isn't it? When nothing comes free. You have to pay. Pay in what sense? Means you have to actually do something so that person will feel like loving you. Isn't it? People don't just love you just like that, just because you are lovable. And if you are lovable, then it's because there's something there that actually inspires them to show love to you. See? But then if you take that, that means also eating the green fruit. So again, part of sin is that you want reward, appreciation, recognition for the little few little things that you do. And then there's no accumulation, you see, so you remain empty. So sin is very much connected with the stage of being empty. See what I mean? So therefore, again and again, we go back to the fundamental principle that what I need is to meditate. I need to meditate every day, I need to meditate several times a day, and I need to meditate at a hot temperature. You know, not just, you know, little lukewarm, little 2 second meditation, you know, make me look good, you know, oh yes, I'm meditating. Can't keep that up very well. It's gotta be deep. And it's gotta be, the logs for the fire are in the murli. You see, and you gotta cut them down and carry them and, you know, churn them and make the heat with those logs, with those coals. You see. And then, draw power from Baba, you see, which is the only source of the things which we need to become full. So you can say that sin is about being empty and sinless is connected with being full. But then what about this weight of sin? So that's really this unpaid debts. We have done many actions which are coming up for payment, and so there we experience the settlement of karma. So settlement of karma is a sign that we have done some actions and we haven't paid. So we have to pay. And there are three ways to pay. You've heard about this, right? Yes? Because the best way is yoga. The tapasya, the effort, to be in your self-respect and to be filled with the qualities and the original five elements of the soul. This is what Daddy called this morning to be a Maharati, you know. Not effortlessly, laboriously trying to get there. No, you're there, you stay there, you keep yourself there. Maharati. But it's still spiritual effort to do that. High quality effort. But we wouldn't call it laboring. Otherwise, you see, the other opportunity is physical sickness. That will hurt. You may get heart problem, you may get cancer, you may get some car accident, some few broken bones, some, you know, TB, cholera, dysentery, who knows, you know, there's lots of possibilities, bird flu, you know. And it's all out there, plenty of opportunity, AIDS, you never know. And so it's very unpleasant when you're ill, and you can't actually make spiritual efforts so easily when you're ill, you're suffering, you see. And so how you handle it, how much yoga you have accumulated before that happens, you know, do you sail through it, are you having a miserable time with it, does it almost kill you, does it actually kill you? What happens? But definitely you finish a lot of karma through that. But you have heard many times it is mentioned that while pain is paining, you know, even if it's just toothache, but it shouldn't show on your face. Of course it'll show on your face, but it's not supposed to show on your face. Why it shows on your face? Because, you know, you can't tolerate it. And you can't tolerate pain, you're resisting it. If you can tolerate pain, you're not resisting it. It is there. You can handle it. You accommodate it, tolerate it. And then it finishes its work of finishing your sin. But you have very high level yoga, and so that makes it possible to do it in a dignified way. And in a way where you're not suffering from suffering, you know. I find that you can make a distinction of two things. One is pain, which is mandatory, and the other is suffering, which is optional. And pain may be there. You're enduring it, you're tolerating it, you're accommodating it, but you're not suffering. Suffering is where you can't tolerate, you can't endure, so you start reacting. Crying, screaming, jumping up and down, dying for the doctor, the medicine, whatever. And that's where you find you reach the end of your strength, you see, as suffering. So when you have a good accumulation of yoga, you also get opportunity of physical pain to get a good relationship with pain, so that pain will do its work, purify you on the physical level and so on, but you are not suffering. That means that you're actually turning what is called as karma bhog into karma yoga. So karma yoga doesn't mean go sweep the floor. Karma yoga means this, that you handle the consequences of negative karma through yoga, and you maintain a stage of equilibrium, serenity, detachment, freedom, ease, and painlessness in pain. You know? Then another way that can come is all kinds of difficulties from relatives, or people give you a hard time, financial problems, these external circumstances that are not actually physical diseases, but they're unpleasant situations that you don't want, that you don't like, that make you crazy, that make you anxious, that make you feel very insecure, and so on and so forth. So those you have to resist with faith. Endurance. I tolerate. People may be insulting you on a daily basis. They may be making you crazy. But you have enough strength inside, you can make it through that. And then when that particular form of purging has completed its course, it goes away. You know, you have a karmic account with that person. Who gives you a very hard time, but you make sure that you do not give as good as you get. You just make it through. In the understanding that this is some kind of karmic account, and I have to understand the nature of this karmic account and pass through it. It may be I have to serve this person. It may be I have to endure this person's insults. It may be anything. But I have to make it through, because if I don't, it's going to intensify the karmic account and never get away from them. You know. But eventually, we get to a point where we're on our own. And I thought it was very interesting, Daddy Jenki said in her class this morning, when it comes to yourself, you're on your own. When it comes to service, we do service with others. But ultimately, we're on our own. And you finish your karma alone, you die alone, you make your spiritual efforts alone. You really, really have to come to terms with being on your own. And this is a very adult stage. If we're still in our childhood or childish stage, we are not ready to be alone, we're not ready to face the fact that we are actually alone, and nobody is obliged to love me or care for me or look after me or anything. If they do, that's nice, that's extra, but nobody is under any obligation to do that. I'm on my own. Now, there are stories about this. In Bhakti, in Shakespeare, it comes the story of King Lear. Have you heard that story? Seen that story? It's all about the princess who says to her father that, no, my fortune is my own. I'm not having my fortune because of you. So he kicked her out, you know, and she ended up with practically nothing. But then she got married with a very wealthy person, and meanwhile her father's fortune changed and it became the opposite. And so these are different stories that are there in the mythology to emphasize the truth of the matter, that we make our own fortune, we eat from our own fortune, and we need to be aware about that. And so that helps us to understand the reason why attachment is very deceptive. Attachment means dependence. So there's another expression that very often gets confused with detachment, and that is dissociation. Very often when people hear the word detachment, they in their dictionary give the meaning for dissociation to the word detachment. But detachment is a very positive thing, in which you are free and you are in easy, harmonious relationship with everyone. Whereas dissociation is where you actually cut off yourself from your feelings, you cut off from people, you cut off yourself from taking responsibility for your actions, you pretend something bad is not bad, something good is not good. It's a very, very negative thing. And a lot of the time people confuse this negative thing with the positive thing, which is detachment. So it's very, very necessary to define the terms when you're churning on these things. So one thing that I often recommend to people who want to go into the depth of particular values or virtues or qualities is to go first of all to a good dictionary. Yeah, a good dictionary. You have these enormous fat dictionaries, Webster's, Oxford, whatever, but English language and French language, German language, and some languages don't have very good dictionaries. Some languages do have very good dictionaries. In the English language, there are good dictionaries. And so, you know that I'm connected with a program called Value Education, which is quite academic in its way. And any of the people who come for that program, they're invited to come with dictionary. And this is because most people are not very clear about the precise meaning of many words, especially these words that have spiritual implications, a spiritual meaning. And even when we have the translations of Bab Dada's Muralis into English or French or Italian or German, the translators pore over the dictionaries to see, now what word should we put here, you know. So to do a really good translation takes a long, long time. And of course, the long time is not available. But anyway, if you have words that are close to each other, at least in the way people use them, it's very useful to see in the dictionary and see what the dictionary says for dissociation and what the dictionary says for detachment and what the dictionary says for love and what the dictionary says for attachment. Because when you want to discuss it, you can expand upon it, you can disagree with it, but you need to have something that is an acceptable starting point or an accepted base point from which to move, you know. And because all of the material that we have in Gyan for double foreigners is translated from something else into something else, and sometimes translated from something into something, and then from that something into some other thing, and then from that something into something else. And it's very easy for the meaning to get lost or altered in translation. You see? And there are not very many people in this world who are expert linguists. And of those, not very, very many of them are BKs. So, you know, this is one way to work with the subject, you see. Very often this word intoxication comes up, you see, because in Hindi, Baba speaks about nasha. Nasha. That's the Hindi for intoxication, nasha. And nasha has two meanings. One, it means you get drunk on alcohol, that's nasha. And the other is you get drunk on God, that is also nasha. But which nasha is which? So you have to know what you mean. So it is amplified, you see. So you have Narayani nasha. Narayani Nasha, the intoxication of being Narayan. Now, if you're a double foreigner, you don't have a clue what is being Narayan, let alone intoxication of being Narayan, right? So you see this picture, Lakshmi and Narayan, so intoxication of being Narayan, what is that? You have no reference point. You see? Then there's people who are out to lunch, that kind of intoxication. A little off track. crazy? You know, there's that also. So you got to ask yourself the question, am I crazy or is this real? Because it's very easy to generate a feeling of excitement, which is very temporary and not real. So it's not very different to what happens when you get drunk. Temporary nasha. Okay, but it's not useful. You see. So the intoxication, that awareness that comes when you have a deep realization of where you are and who you are and who is teaching you, that comes from a lot of churning. A lot of churning, not a little churning. Deep churning over many, many days and weeks. And so sometimes Baba says you grind your own ingredients. So in bhakti they have a thing called soma. Heard about that? Baba is Somnath. So there's a thing called soma, which is a particular plant, and if you grind it up with your stones and you drink that, you can get high. But then you come down again. So in religions, most of the ancient religions, including Hinduism, Native American practices, and so on, they use these drugs to simulate spiritual intoxication. Then you get other people who are in the lunatic asylums, or if not they should be, who have this other kind of intoxication where they're definitely not quite grounded. And then there's another kind of intoxication, which is very rare and special. The result of really, really churning and really understanding and really connecting with Baba in a very sort of very extra special way. And Baba comes to you. He can do that. He can come to you and carry you off into his world of intoxication. And that may happen once or twice in a lifetime of Gyan. But it exists. And that is intoxication, but it doesn't come every day, believe me. Now, of course, people want it to come every day. People think it should come every day. But anything like that has to be rare, otherwise it doesn't have any value. You know, like people used to have visions every day and then they became ordinary, you know. Now, very rare, the visions. Baba said the part of visions will open up again when the circumstances get very, very extreme, you know. And even now, when there are very extreme circumstances and someone has very great spiritual power, they can flip into that other state where they're not there for this thing. Some torture victims can do that. People who get tortured for their spiritual beliefs can do that. People who get tortured for their crimes can't do that, because sin means you have to suffer for what you did. You know? But if you, you know, if somebody wants to, you know, beat you up because you don't want to be impure, then, you see, Baba can carry you up. And they can do what they want. You're not there for it. It's their sin. You know, but you come back. I've seen in Malaysia, a particular time of year, as the criminals, not just the criminal class of people, mostly, this is what I was told anyway, that they, on a particular time, they climb up these many, many stairs and they will hang fish hooks in their thighs and on their back, with lemons in there. And they will put big hooks in their back and pull chariots across the stony things. And they're in trance, you know, and then the next day, ooh. But at that time they don't feel anything. They stick knife through the tongue. They go like that, whole day. horrible blazing sun. They don't bleed. So these things exist in the world of bhakti. They believe in the goddesses and they walk on fire and all this kind of thing without getting any damage to the body because of this faith, you see. And also it has to finish off a certain amount of sin and produce a certain amount of occult powers and so on and so forth. You see, it was a kind of tapasya in bhakti. What we're doing is a different thing, you see. What we have to do is face ourselves with neutrality. We have to be completely neutral about our negative stuff or our pain, or if somebody had been, you know, abusing us in the most extreme manner, we still have to be neutral about it so that the effect of that, whether I did some sin to somebody or somebody did a sin to me, doesn't make much difference to the fact that there's an effect. And what we're suffering from is the effect. I see. So we had to be neutral about it. It's not good, it's not bad, it just is. Give it to Baba, move on. That's a very intelligent way to handle it. You can't do anything about what somebody did. You can't even do anything about what you did. But you can adopt an attitude of neutrality and say, okay, so be it. There's a drama. And now, move on. You see, make yourself strongly connected with your five elements of the soul, love, peace, purity, power, and bliss. And be totally connected with Baba, and everything else is drama, it doesn't matter. Whatever it is, it's fine, whatever it is. And be the instrument, speak sweetly, be humble, keep going. These are the keys Baba has given to us, you see. You can't do anything about the fact that it's the end of the world, you know, and the end of the world is a very unpleasant procedure. Yeah. There's rioting, fighting, pillaging, and different kinds of violence, different kinds of miseries. It's there, and we have to pass through it, you see. But we don't have to pay too much attention on it. We don't have to worry about it, because it's what it is, you know. And he has told us, this is what it is. Not your problem, my problem. I'm God, I take care of it. You meditate and become neutral about all the negative things that you have seen and experienced and done, and be free, you see. Know that you are a pure soul, and whatever you did or whatever anybody did, it doesn't matter. Leave it. Don't do it again. You see? If you hate it, it's too much involvement with it. If you're neutral about it, it's easier to just let it go and forget it. Forget about it. It doesn't matter. You know? There's always somebody who's had something worse done. You know? And so you move forward. So I'll stop there. We have a few minutes if anybody has any questions. Om Shanti. Anybody have any question? We have a mic here. Oh, come.
Shanti, if you feel attracted to something or someone, what is the best method to let it go?
Well, I think the firm, determined thought is actually the best method. And if that doesn't work, remove yourself from it. And if that doesn't work, remove yourself a little further. If that doesn't work, tell people about it. Or make an arrangement with somebody that if you, you know, like for example, if you're an addict, and you need to have alcohol, you see, and then it's very difficult not to be attracted to alcohol. You don't think of anything else. Is it alcohol, alcohol, oh God, get some alcohol, you know. So you tell people, okay, I'm an alcoholic, so okay, don't go anywhere near any drink shops, any pubs, any parties. Stay away, find something, go for a walk, you know, do whatever it is, don't go near. Don't have association with people who do that, you know. have association with teetotalers, you know, meditate, you know, stay away. And then its grip on you gradually reduces. Secondly, intensify the yoga, because yoga is the attraction to Baba. And attraction to something else means insufficient attraction to Baba. So we have to try and undo the magnetic effect of that by staying away and increase the magnetic connection with Baba by staying close to Baba. And then if you're highly dishonest, which is what happens with people who are very attracted, have some strategically placed people who can spot it when you're fiddling around with your arrangements, and they say, yep, over here. You see, that helps. But of course you're going to get, you know, embarrassed, and you're going to have to really lose your ego, because when you're attracted to something, you always think, oh, well, this is good and it's right, but it's not, you see. And so if you tell people about it and they say, hey, come away from there, you have to bite your tongue, you know, and bite the dust ego-wise, because you're going to have to again and again admit, yeah, you know, I'm an addict, this and that. So that's for people who are sort of official addicts. But then people are, if you're attracted, it's not very different from an addiction. And so if you apply some of those ways that addicts use to stay away from that stuff, it's quite effective. So you can do that. And a lot of it involves ego death.
Quelle différence vous faites entre l'amitié et, disons, les péchés, quoi. Enfin, l'attachement, l'amitié et l'attachement.
L'attirance.
Oui.
Okay, this is French.
C'est quand même bien l'amitié, croyez pas?
He's asking the difference between attraction and friendship. And he says, well, friendship is very good, isn't it? Yes. Vous me comprenez mon anglais? Elle te traduit, okay. So, he says, friendship is very good, and friendship is very good. And friendship and attraction, generally speaking, are mixed. Friendship and attachment are mixed. Friendship and dependence are mixed. So really, I think, because we're part of a spiritual practice, or our life is involving a spiritual practice, we want to purify our relationships. That means we have to identify areas in our particular friendships where there's an element of attraction, an element of dependence, and work on that. Because wherever there is something poisonous in our friendship, there will be some problem in the relationship, some kind of suffering, some kind of miscommunication, some kind of difficulty, and we want to purge the friendship of all those poison elements. And then we start to be able to distinguish, yeah, this is the friendship and that's the contaminants, and we don't need any pollutions in our friendship. Yeah.
I was very interested about the neutral state you're talking about. Because it's something I've been thinking about and something I've been experiencing and coming in and out of. And I'm fascinated by the experience of neutral, because it brings you into self-respect. But I'm just wondering if you could talk about the deeper aspects of moving into the neutral state and what your experience has been.
This expression that I mentioned before, it's not good, it's not bad, it just is. Very simple little statement, but I find it very good. In the Golden Age and Silver Age, we perform neutral karma. We want to reach a point where we don't have any more debt, we don't have any more negative account that has to be paid for by doing positive karma. We want to get to a point where our attitude towards ourselves and other people and the situation and so on doesn't produce an emotional response. But we respond to something with depth, with maturity, with dispassion and compassion. That's another thing to look at in the dictionary. Passion, dispassion, compassion. To be without emotion about something doesn't mean to be cold, calculating and unfeeling. But to be without emotion, to be neutral about something, means that you'll be able to very clearly evaluate it and understand what is the best course of action to take in regard to this thing. And you won't be coming from a place of selfishness or emptiness or inadequacy or superiority or inferiority or any of those things, because they distort your perception of a situation and they compromise your quality of your action. So I think any act that is performed from this very cool, calm, serene, dispassionate and compassionate state is going to be like Baba. You see, after all, Baba was experienced chariot. He had to pass through everything. And he talks a lot about these different balances, love and law, being completely independent of the pairs of opposites, fame, defamation, praise, success, failure, all this kind of thing. So we have to be like that, balanced, neutral. And then I think we can be comfortable. This is the stage that Baba's talking about. Okay, so let's have meditation. Om Shanti.